This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. Give it all that you got. Into the arena. It's time to make it your best shot. Chase the dream and break the scene. Your opportunity is right here. It's right here. It's right now. Welcome to my arena. Man. Whenever you find something super cool that's going to help your performance, it turns out that the answer is never easy. And I just came across The Growing Gap Between Good and Great. It's the 2013 Miller Hyman Sales Best Practices Study from their new research institute headed by Joe Galvin. And it basically shows three things. You've got to focus on the customer. Who didn't know that? But it's much harder than you think it is. You've got to have a collaborative culture. I call this unit cohesion. And as soon as you start talking about culture, you know it's going to be difficult to execute. And they calibrate what they do, and so they can repeat what makes them successful. So this is tough stuff. I invited Joe Galvin into the arena to talk about this, how you might be able to execute some of this in your own sales practice, and what's next for Miller Hyman. So here we go with Joe Galvin in the arena.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a privilege to join the list of very respected people you've had as guests. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share our research with your audience.
Well, you didn't hear the one with my little brother, the comedian, then. So we'll go with esteemed guest.
That's okay.
So share a little bit with us about what your role is there at Miller Hyman. Everybody, anybody listening to this that has a sales pedigree is going to know Miller Hyman, you know, very well. But tell me a little bit about your role there.
Sure. I lead the Miller Hyman Research Institute, which is an organization that we've invested in over the last year and a half since I've joined, to bring the to bring research data perspectives to our clients, and to do that in a style that's similar to a Gartner Group type approach. My background is sales at Xerox, sales at Gartner. I was a Gartner analyst where I focused on the implications of SFA and CRM on the B2B sales organization. Ran worldwide ops there in the past, sold it. So real comfort level with this type of research style. And we're building that and creating that for our clients to share the research and to take our research to the next level, but also to be very practical and pragmatic in the recommendations that we have. One of the things that we find is important with clients is a need to not just understand the issues, but to be able to apply them in the context of their environment. What is their situation? What's their market position? What's their growth trajectory? What's their strategy? And how will common issues like social selling, social CRM, the impact and changes of marketing, all the key issues, strategic issues we see organizations faced with, we provide that research. We do the distillation of the massive amounts of public content and then work directly with our clients to both help them understand the behaviors, the attributes and performance of world-class sales organizations, but also to provide them with the insight and the perspectives that an experience-based perspective can offer. And that's what the analysts at the Miller Hyman Research Institute have, is practical real-world experience. And we work with our clients to say, look, these are the issues. Here's what they mean. Now let's connect and see how they fit in the context of what you're trying to accomplish.
And I don't know what piece of research this is for you or how many pieces of research you have. The first thing that I caught wind of here coming out of your group is the 2013 Sales Best Practices Study and the Growing Gap Between Good and Great, which is an awesome report. I found a few things really particularly interesting about it, but I want to just stick with the three big themes, and people can go and download this, and we'll point them to a link at the end to go and find this for themselves. But the very first thing that shows up in your research is that customer being at the core of everything a world-class sales organization does. And I know so many people who, when I talk to them about value and value propositions, they're not very tight on what that means and why it's compelling or why it's differentiated to their customer. And then at the same time, I hear some companies talking about customers like customers the enemy, like that they've got this battle going on with customers. And the research shows that world-class organizations make their customers their core and that they're extremely focused on customers. What are they doing different? What sticks out?
Well, what's interesting about this research is that this is the 10th year of the Miller Hyman Sales Best Practice Study. And what we were doing through the Research Institute is taking it to the next level, which is really trying to get inside the data, try to understand what the data is telling us, but more importantly, help our clients understand what are the behaviors, the attributes, and performance of world-class sales organizations. And what our research showed here in the 10-year anniversary, in the 2013 study, was that there were three dominant behaviors, three dominant attributes of world-class sales organizations that distinguished them from all others. The first was that they have a customer core. That means they're focused on the customer. They understand the customer's concept before they propose a solution. They're truly customer-focused, and we'll come back and talk about that in a minute. The second element is they have a collaborative culture. By collaborative culture, I mean this is something more than just, you know, teamwork posters on the wall and this kumbaya, let's play nice. But rather it's an organization that has the structural and cultural wherewithal to actually collaborate, meaning they've got a common strategy, common frameworks, common templates, common language terminology that they use to discuss the customer and the account and the opportunity and the interaction that's coming up. So instead of talking about terms and what do you mean by this, they're focused on the customer. Next, they've got a common set of messages, messages the customer engages when they're doing their own research, messages they deliver at progressive levels of detail and complexity as the customer goes through their buying process or what I call their knowledge acquisition process. And then finally, this element of knowledge. What do we know? What do we know about our company's goals and objectives? What do I know as a rep? What do you know as a specialist, et cetera? How do we integrate this knowledge? So collaborative culture is the second attribute. And the third one is calibrated success, which actually isn't that surprising, but the data shows us how disconnected many organizations are between aligning their goals and objectives with their metrics, having the comp plan aligned, just, you know, things that we have been dealing with for a long time, we still show a large gap. But the dominant theme through this all is that it begins with having this customer core and being focused on what the customer's concept is, what is the problem that the customer is trying to fix, accomplish, or avoid, and how you can help them with that.
Why do you think that so many organizations, we talk about everything outside of the customer. There's all these other issues that we have going on. We sort of end up looking inside all the time instead of focusing outside. Does your research hint at that in any way?
It doesn't so much hint at that as it suggests the fact that maybe it's easier to look internally. Maybe it's easier to count the things we can count than to count the things that really matter or count. And we think relationships matter. You know, we think the way, and our research supports this, that the way you sell is by understanding the customer's concept, right? I struggle with this notion of the buyer's process. I say that because our research shows there's more people involved in the buying decision. There's more steps involved in the buying decision. You could even make an argument that there's generational influences in the buying decision. I would challenge anyone listening to this to think about the last five customer deals you closed. And let me ask you this, of the people that made the decision this time, how many of them were involved last time? What it shows is, or what it leads to the fact is that every customer makes every decision differently every time. And the challenge for the sales rep is to figure out how this group of people is going to make this decision this time. That's why you can't take a one-size-fits-all approach. That's why you can't lead with a pitch first and ask questions later approach, because it will not connect to what's important to the customer. I guess
it's
I learned that from early. Go ahead.
We hear all this stuff about the buyer's process, and I think you actually have to help them with a process, because in my experience, many of them don't have a process, and you're right, it's different from time to time. And in fact, when you talk about consensus and how complicated it's getting, I was on a sales call maybe 4 weeks ago, and there were 14 people in the boardroom, all of whom could say no and none of whom could say yes, independent of the rest of the group. I mean, and that's sort of what we're looking at.
I think that's the reality
dealing with what we're dealing with.
I think that's the reality of today, and we've got this increased levels of transparency, more people involved, this notion of the buyer's risk and the buyer's risk paradigm comes to fore, and that, you know, making a decision, if you've ever been on the buying side, and I implemented a couple global SFA solutions, so I've been on the buying side a couple times, it's chaos. The buyers aren't in control. This notion that the buyer's in control of the buying process, or the buyer's, you know, 40% or 57% or some random number through the buying process, I just can't connect that to the reality of the buying situations that I've been involved in as a rep, as a manager that I've studied. It just doesn't work that way in reality. The reality
is 117% through, I think. You know, the number keeps growing every time we hear it.
How do you measure that? I mean,
I don't
know for a fact one of the things that we're looking at internally to do We've been doing research on it for the 18 months that I've been here. We're shopping. We're not buying. I think one of the grand flaws in many of the popular trends out there or themes out there is this notion of qualification. It's at the qualification level where the buyer or the buying group or the buying team moves from shopping, which is what we all do at some point in time, to buying, which means they're moving forward to an executable end state. And what we think, and again, our research shows, is that the way you sell is by understanding the customer's concept. One of the great data points that comes out of our research and this data that we've been doing is a question that says, we understand the customer's concept before we propose a solution. We clearly understand our customer's issues before we propose a solution. World-class organizations responded in the affirmative, agree or strongly agree, 89% of the time, while the all category only 40. So it's clear one of these attributes is by understanding what's important to the customer, understanding their concept, and most importantly, understanding this decision dynamic, how this group of people is going to make this decision this time is what makes sales so challenging. I think it's what draws us to it because it's the proverbial puzzle without a box top. And it really distinguishes what I think are really, really great organizations and great salespeople from everyone else. And that is that they've got the wherewithal to not just understand what they're capable of providing, but to be able to connect that to those elements that are most important and most impactful to the customer. I go back to my early days at Xerox. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I could run you straight down this road because I think that if it's lined up with the one, two, or three things that are really important, it seems to be able to get done. And if it's not lined up with that, then it seems to stall out and not get done. Is that
well, again, depending on where you are in your market growth. If you're a small company trying to, with no real market presence, trying to offer some upgraded or advanced capabilities, well, you've got to go out and make bold claims. Think of Salesforce.com circa 2002. Cloud computing and multi-tenant computing and no IT, right? They had a new company with a new concept. So they had to come out and say, hey, no IT, no upfront expenses, right? Great adoption. Those first customers took a huge risk. Now it's where everybody goes, right? Where you think about IBM back in the 70s, no one got fired for recommending IBM. Why? Known name with an existing solution, low risk. This advent of transparency, Anthony, I think, has really changed the paradigm. There's more transparency to information. There's not more good information. There's just more information and more availability of it. The buyers have more transparency to what the sellers are offering and what they're saying in the public market. Internally, the buying entities themselves have more transparency to their respective bosses and influences. It's not that the buyer's in control. Now the buyer's X percent of the way through the process. That's a transaction. That's a product. That's consumer-esque behavior. In complex environments, every customer makes every decision different every time, and it's a sales rep who can adapt not just what your company is capable of doing, but adapt it to what's important to the customer. That's where we see world-class organizations succeed, and that's why this concept of having a customer core and that relationships matter is at the center of our sales system and really at the center of what we see world-class organizations doing.
I'm trying to stay out of relationships for one more question, but I'm still with you on that. We'll get there. You know, this collaborative culture, it's interesting to me because I've written a number of posts on this in the past about, you know, unit cohesion as a force multiplier. And it seems like companies, they get together, and I sometimes know salespeople gripe because they have to sell inside as hard as they do outside, sometimes harder. And then it feels like they're running their own professional service firm. But when you do get this all aligned, and I think your research, if I remember right, there's an enormous gap between sort of the base group that you survey and world-class. I mean, maybe the world-class is over 90% score on this, is that they have this unit cohesion, and they figure out how to do all the things they need to do together as a team to collaborate either internally and with the customer to get this done. Share a little bit about what your research shows there.
Sure. There's a series of questions. When we go through our analysis of our sales best practice study, the first thing we do is a regression analysis to look at which of the 12 attributes or behaviors have the greatest and most direct cause and effect relationship on performance. And then that starts to tell us a story. One of the key questions that we pulled out was, our organization collaborates across all departments to pursue large deals. 93% of the world-class respondents agreed or strongly agreed to that versus 43% for all. And what that suggests, and there's other questions that support it in different ways, but what it suggests is that in those high-performing sales organizations, and the gap, the performance gap between world-class and all, was around 25% in key data points around quota attainment, new account acquisition. You know, you think about those core metrics that are most meaningful. A gap of about 25% between world-class and all. I think when it comes to collaboration, as I said earlier, it's more than just a theme or a mantra, but they have got a structure in place. They've got a common set of messages that they can leverage, and they've got a shared knowledge base that allows them now to focus not on what are we going to do and how are we going to do it, effectively creating it one at a time. Every opportunity is uniquely positioned. I create a new message. We source new knowledge, as opposed to it one at a time. Collaboration allows them to focus and optimize around the customer. Because we know the frameworks and structures and the language and terminology that we're saying. We know what our go-to-market messages are. We know what our value messages are. We know what the messages that the varying subject matter experts will deliver deeper into the customer's knowledge acquisition process. And we also know what we're trying to accomplish as a company. What are our goals and objectives? What's our vision and strategy? What's our product roadmap? Where have we been successful before? I need a pre-sales specialist, either in a product or a market or a vertical, to come in. What does that person know that I don't know that I can now bring to bear? I think we've all at one point in our careers been on that, you know, 10-legged, five-person sales call where we're meeting each other in the lobby or in the briefing 15 minutes before the call. That's when you get into seller chaos. World-class organizations don't have to spend time figuring out, you know, Tower of Babel language and structure and message things. They can focus on what's important to the customer. So this is an area, Anthony, we're going to do more research on, because I think that this attribute of a collaborative culture can be more than just the teamwork posters on the wall. It can actually be the inner fabric of how an organization works. And I think going forward, whether it's how we collaborate as a sales team, how we collaborate with marketing, or even how we collaborate with a customer, I think this increasing levels of transparency are going to force broader degrees of collaboration. And I think evoke this concept of a social sales community at some point in the future, the tip of that spear being what you see with Salesforce Chatter or Jive or some of the other social technologies. And I apologize for on a trail right there.
No, I'm glad I can drag you down this trail. It's interesting to me because if you've ever been part of a team like that, you know exactly what this feels like, right? Where you don't have to say anything. All you have to do is look at somebody and automatically everybody knows where we are with the customer in the room, whether we're presenting. I would love to see if there's anything after the fact, what these organizations look like in delivering and executing, because my hypothesis here, or my hallucination, is that these organizations probably execute better once they sell because that culture exists and everybody is on the same page.
I think, too, they're probably quicker to bring new hires up to speed because they teach them the structure, the language, the message, and the knowledge, and now they can quickly plug in. I think that they're better able to sell more complex products because they can zero in and focus on customer needs and requirements and adapting to that versus who do I know and who do I need to know. You know, you look at sales organizations. The people that have been there for a long time are generally the top performers. Why? Because they figured out how to succeed in that environment, but they've also built this incredibly extensive personal knowledge network. They know who to go to get to what they need to get the piece they need to solve the customer's problem. I think collaborative organizations, world-class organizations, take that out of the black market and they make it more accessible and more usable to all salespeople.
Yeah, that's a great point. Once everybody's there, it's easy to get everybody going the same way. World, in my experience, all things being equal, relationships win. All things being unequal, relationships still probably win. But it's more about relationships of value, and it's not enough just to have a friendship and I take you to a basketball game or whatever the case may be. But you talk about issues with strategic relationships in the report, and some of the key issues around strategic relationships. Give me first, I guess, your thoughts on relationships and their value to selling. So for anybody who thinks I'm out in the wilderness, which maybe I am, but if I am, I think you're in the wilderness with me, about the value of relationships and selling, and then what is the world-class sales organization thinking about as strategic issues when it comes to relationships?
Yeah, I think there's no debate, that at least to those people that have actually sold, that relationships matter. They matter in our personal lives, they matter in our professional lives, they matter as consumers, and they matter in the complex B2B world. I think one of the things that you hear in the market is around the need to to connect to customers and to pitch to customers and this whole concept of you lead with a pitch. I think there's environments where maybe that works. I think what we're struggling with is that there are so many different scenarios that people sell into. One of the things I love about my job is I get to talk to people in all of the dominant B2B verticals where complex sales take place. And I think you have to think about this in a couple continuums. Continuum one is, what is your approach to the customer? How do you as an organization connect to a customer? Is it that you give information or do you provide perspective? Because if you give information, now you're leading with content. If you're providing perspective, now you're providing content in the context of the customer. And then what are you selling? If you're selling a product and you're giving information, then all you can really do is pitch, because products are very tangible. We know what they do. We know what they cost. We know how much they weigh. We know what their output is. I'm an ex-Xerox guy, so speeds, copy speed, misjam percentage, all that kind of stuff. Products are very defined. So if your customer approach is to give information and you're selling a product, then you kind of got to lead with a pitch. But that's like the least complex, the least challenging. That's the easiest thing to do. Give everybody a pitch, teach them to pitch, and tell them to go and do it. That only works in a small place, and quite frankly, those types of sales are the ones that are going away, because if all the customer needs is availability, cost, and ship date, then you don't really need a salesperson. What you need is a customer service and support sales resource. If you're selling a complex solution, a solution by definition is unique to the problem the individual is trying to solve. It has to be integrated. It has to be customized. It has to be configured. In those environments, if you're leading with information, if you're giving information, it's much more of an education. And this is where we see strength around, like, sales enablement or messaging, where you're trying to give your sales rep all the different tools, the messages, but they have to craft an individual message for that solution. So these two continuums of, are you giving information or you're providing perspective? Are you selling a product or solution? When we talk about providing perspectives, well, if you're selling a product, this is where we see the sales process come into place. This is where activity comes in, right? We're giving perspectives. That was spin. Spin was, oh, your situation, Anthony, is this. And the problem it creates for you is that. Oh, and the implication would be this. Needs payoff, would it be a benefit if? That's the process of product. When you're now providing perspectives on solutions, this is when you focus on the customer. This is when you focus on the buying process. This continuum, this movement, this shift from products to solution is predicated on our ability to understand what's important to the customer and how what we provide is connected to that. It comes back to the statement earlier. We clearly understand our customers' issues before we propose a solution. We always understand what's important to our customers before we deliver a proposal. This is this movement from products to solutions. And this is where I think most organizations are trying to get to, because the transactional, highly commoditized, how much and when can you ship it? You're right, that's being moved away. That's going to a totally different role of customer service sales or complete disintermediation to the web. So the pitch first, ask questions later may work in that pure transactional market, or if you're a new small company, you don't have to worry about the 99 people who get pissed off and hang up because one person that might appeal to you. That's why we get called at dinner time from telemarketers, because they know 999 people are going to hang up, but one may answer. If you're just trying to get one client a day, that works. If you're trying to maintain and retain long-term, mutually profitable business relationships, the proverbial win-win, then it's all about relationships. And I guess anybody who sold would have the same reaction, visceral reaction that you and I are having to this. It doesn't make any sense in the world of sales.
And I think one of the things that's out there, I'll end with this, I'll get your feedback on it, but that one of the things that I see so much is this grasping at the new shiny object, grasping at the magic bullet. There's got to be an easy answer. And you know what your research shows, and I'm not sure how happy you're going to be with me saying this, is that the easy answer is the hard answer. And so when you say make customers the core of your business, the gap between where we are and getting there is a big gap to cover. And when you say collaborative culture, when you talk about, as soon as culture comes out of your mouth, we're talking about the biggest, most complicated change we can ever ask anybody to make, right?
Right.
So the easy answer is the hard answer, and I still see so much grasping for what's the shortest path for me to perform better or to help my people make their number. And is that your experience there, Miller Hyman?
As soon as somebody invents the lose weight pill, we'll have a mass movement towards that, because if all it took was to take a pill, we'd all be in perfect shape. Unfortunately, it requires diet, exercise, and lifestyle changes that most of us aren't willing to do. Same thing goes here. If you think there's a pitch that somebody in marketing can create that all your salespeople can go out and deliver, then I guess I'd go do that too. I just don't know that that's going to work. I haven't seen it work.
I've seen so much of a gap for salespeople in getting the business acumen and the situational knowledge and effective process, you know, all the things that are core to this, that when they sit down in front of a customer, they're unprepared to create value. And if they're unprepared to create value with that customer, then they don't win. And again, these are the hard questions to ask. How do we get them the business acumen and the experience and situational knowledge and arm them to be equipped to have big conversations with lots of stakeholders in a complex buying decision that, you know, I told you my experience, 14 people, zero that could say yes. And it's tough to manage that because there's a lot of consensus building and you've got to be on your game. So I appreciate you sharing this with me. Where do we point people to get the research themselves?
Great. You just go to MillerHyman.com. If you go to the Research Institute, that'll connect you to the opportunity to not just download the executive summary to this report, but you'll also be invited to participate in our Sales Performance and Productivity Survey that's going on right now. There is an extensive blog post that is on Customer Think. There'll be this asset available, and the Sales Management Association has got a summary presentation that I recorded for them that takes it through. Or they can just reach me, jgalvin@millerhyman.com. Be happy to share this with you. I think there's a lot of insight and a lot of real powerful ideas inside this research. But what I've learned is that just as every customer makes every decision differently, it has different implications and different inferences for each organization. And that the key part of this is not just understanding the research, but working with our clients to understand how it would work in the context of their environment. Because everyone's different, everyone's got a different set of challenges and going down different paths. So it really is about the individual, both in terms of how people buy, but also in terms of how our clients are able to take advantage from this data. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share it. I look forward to sharing with anyone who might want to have a second or third level question with me on it.
All right. Thanks so much.
You can hear that Joe's a little passionate about this, huh? So you can find Joe at MillerHyman.com or email him directly, jgalvin@MillerHyman.com. I'll put a link in the show notes to the research. You can find that at MillerHyman.com in the Knowledge Center. As always, I'm Anthony Annarino, and you can find me at thesalesblog.com. Do sign up for the newsletter. I'll see you next week in the arena.